inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rain.
In this week's edition of Garden Talk, simple things to do to mitigate overly humid and warm conditions in our greenhouse. And with us on the line is Master Gardener Ed Byarski. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Matt, on another gorgeous day in paradise.
Yeah, well, some of us have been growing things in greenhouses and probably have noticed some things starting to happen to some plants, like maybe some mold or some, like, gray fuzz growing on some things. That's not a good thing, is it?
No, it really isn't. And we want to be removing the offending leaves if they are infested with mold. That's with our cooling temperatures, nighttime temperatures, higher humidity, that's what happens. It's perfect mold-growing conditions. So we started out the season, there were all those little cute little plants that we put in, and then we put a few more. I got room for a few more, and now we're finding it's a jungle out there, and I am removing plants, partly because they're quitting their production, like cucumbers, as the days get shorter. I mean, they're still trying to bloom, but they aren't setting fruit very well. And so I'm gradually harvesting the last of them and pickling or just eating. And in the process, opening things up, still making sure we've got the ventilation that we need in the greenhouse to keep the air moving.
Yeah, opening up vents, maybe even starting some fans, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. It's hard. We want to keep more heat in the greenhouse. And, I mean, for me, I've just got single-layer plastic greenhouses. For those folks who have better insulation, either double layer or some hard plastic or the coverings, they can keep their temperatures warmer, yet keep that ventilation moving. And even if they don't open up the vents to the outside or keep them open all the time, having the indoor, having an oscillating fan in there to move the air around inside helps, so that the mold spores don't settle on the leaves and start to grow. So that really helps a lot. Starting to trim the tomato tops, tomato flower, again, tomatoes are still flowering. I mean, some of mine are 8 feet tall, and they're flowering way up there at the top. But those, even if they manage to set fruit, are unlikely to ripen fruit into October and beyond as our days get shorter and shorter also. So if we can trim those tops, then that forces the plant to put its energy into ripening the tomatoes it's already set. And we can also help stress them to do that by slowing our watering, and that gives them the signal that, it's just about time, things are almost over, so we need to ripen these fruit so the seeds can ripen, so potentially we could, the seeds, they complete their life cycle for producing seeds for next year's crop.
Okay. And a couple of weeks ago, we initially talked about the woolly bear caterpillar that turns into the spotted tussock moth around town. And when we first had our conversation about it, there was one that I captured in my yard, and I put it in the garden shed in a jar, and it immediately started cocooning. And I haven't seen any around town, but apparently a bunch of other people are still seeing those little critters around town, right?
Every day. I mean, crossing my driveway. So yesterday I was picking kiwis, and they're up in the kiwi vines. And I've been picking apples. They're in their apple trees. Particularly, I look up on the tips of the new growth, and that's where they are eating, I suppose, to fatten up for the winter, just like the bears are doing. It's the same thing. They know, the days are getting shorter. Winter is coming, and they are... I got some feedback at the food fest last weekend about somebody who was not happy with my suggestion that they be squished, squashed, poked and prodded and removed from the gene pool.
Why?
But again, I'm growing stuff for me and for my friends and for other people, and trying to teach people to do that, grow food for us, and I'd rather not grow it I'm selective about who I'm sharing with. Let's say. So some of the critters out there are, again, you have where they're not native or invasive, and I suppose all these tasty foods we're growing, an awful lot of those are not native either. But I'm being selective. I mean, I think I'm improving our environment in the process, and some of those critters are not welcome.
They're also kind of, from my understanding, I wasn't affected at all when I handled it, but I guess we mentioned it before, those little white hairs can be quite painful and cause allergic reaction.
They really are, and my neighbor got one down his shirt while he was driving his tractor, and he had a severe skin reaction to the point where his wife, settled him down, washed him off. He said, cleaning off the hair, this caterpillar had no hairs by the time she got the shirt off him and such. But, blistering of the skin, and she ended up giving him a couple of Benadryl and using some, alcohol to wipe down to clean off the skin. And it took some hours for the swelling and reaction to go away. And I chatted with one of my emergency room providers that we did a cross consultation. We talked about plants too, but she said that's exactly the right thing to do, and to use a water and baking soda paste on the blisters, or even an oatmeal paste on the blisters to help soothe the skin. And just be careful if you're going to handle them, I guess. Bottom line on that one.
Okay, Ed Bajarski, thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Matt.
Garden Talk is a weekly feature here on KTOO during the spring, summer, and very early fall. You can also go to our website at ktoo.org/gardentalk to ask your own gardening question. My brain to the muse from the land.